This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in today for Mark Haney. The National Underground Railroad Freedom Center will present the world premiere of the exhibition Mandela, The Journey to Ubuntu. The exhibition commemorates the life and legacy of former South African President Nelson Mandela through the photographs of Matthew Wilman. The photographer visited and documented many of the locations that played an important role in South Africa's route to racial equality and Mandela's personal fight for freedom. Wilman joins us this afternoon to talk about the exhibit, and you can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100, or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Later in the hour, we'll talk about World Water Day and the continuing struggle to find clean water around the world. Again, if you have a question or comment, 513-419-7100. And Matthew Wilman, welcome to Cincinnati, and thanks for joining us.
It's really good to be here. Thank you, Jay. Good to be here.
So let's start out, just describe this exhibit. When folks go to the Freedom Center, what are they going to see and experience?
Our whole aim is really to just to take people out of Cincinnati and into Africa. It's quite a hands-on. We use all the senses to bring people into a platform to experience the life of Mandela. You know, from his rural upbringings. Those of you who are familiar with Africa will know we have vast tracts of land of rural communities, villages, and we journey Mandela's life right through apartheid. Those of you who know about apartheid, so it captures the essence of Mandela's life, what it is to be in Africa and to experience the horrors of apartheid.
Now, you were a commissioned photographer for the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and for 10 years you were as a photographer for
That's
Mr.
Correct.
Mandela himself.
Yeah.
But to get there is quite an interesting story. Tell us that story about how you achieved those two things.
Jay, thanks for asking the question. To the viewers, you know what? I came from absolutely nowhere. I was this sort of middle-class white guy who lived on the east coast of Africa, and I had this crazy dream to just shake the hand of Nelson Mandela. You must understand that our country was on the brink of a civil war, and the hope there was no hope. And then here comes this man who was freed from prison in 1990, and he only preached unity. He only preached forgiveness. He only preached working together for what we called the Rainbow Nation. So as a young guy at 15 years old, certain tragedies happened in my family and that I was kind of left on my own. And I recognized Mandela as sort of this grandfather figure. And I used to say to friends, I'm going to meet this man one day and I'm going to shake his hand. And they would laugh at me like, oh, whatever, Matthew, he lives so far away, it's never going to. And I committed 10 years of my life. I wrote 72 letters to the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I lived on Robben Island for 18 months. I lived in the favela townships across the country that pertained to Mandela's life. And it's amazing that after 9.5 years, you get that phone call and says, sorry, have you been trying to get hold of Mandela? And I'm like, yes, 9.5 years. But, you know, it defined my whole life. But it did more than me just meeting Mandela. And then subsequently being his photographer for the next 10 years, it gave me something to hold on to and to understand who my people are and what our struggles are and continues to be today. So it's an incredible journey.
Obviously you were his photographer, but how well did you, you got to shake his hand, so you fulfilled that dream.
Yeah.
But how close did you get to know him?
You know what? I was there because I had a job to do. I was commissioned to archive and document this incredible life and times of Nelson Mandela. But I was there in a formal capacity to photograph and document him. But you know, by default of the game, that you're there, you're with him, you're in the room, you're there when he's meeting presidents, you're there when he's meeting royalty or philanthropists. So yes, of course, you know, you get to know each other. And after the first 6 months, Mandela gave me a name. And from day one, or from that 6 months onwards, I was called Prince Harry. And
why? Do you have any idea why Prince Harry?
I know why. You know what? I'm a young South African, or I'm 37 years old now, but I started with him when I was 23. I needed to honor this man in everything I did, and I had nothing to give him. So what I used to do is I used to dress in a suit. So every shoot, whether I was in the desert, in the rural township of Ntegizweni or Nkunu Mvezo, wherever Mandela had his birthplace and his homestead, I would be there in a suit on a gravel road in 45 or 110 degrees Fahrenheit. it was a small way I could honor him. And he, Mandela respected that. He could see what I was doing. And he kind of gave me that honorary name, Prince Harry. And it stuck. And I used to call him Mkulu, which means grandfather in Xhosa.
Now, I would assume that you probably had hundreds, maybe even thousands of photographs to go through.
Definitely.
What's the process? I know just here when we are trying to put up a slideshow on a web post, we have 20 pictures and we have to get it down to 5, and it's a struggle.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you begin that? I mean, I would assume there's like a first cut, second cut. How do you
third
pick
and fourth, fifth?
How do you, of all those photographs, how do you pick the ones that end up in this exhibit?
Good question. You know what? When I got in touch with the Freedom Center and we built a relationship. Remember, this isn't just 3-4 months of relationship. This is 4 years of working together in culmination of all that and the relationships that have been built, incredible relationships. So when it came to images, I mean, I've got terabytes, you know, external hard drives.
Terabytes is a lot of computer memory.
It's a lot. And I hold the archive of the Nelson Mandela Foundation because I'm the guy who documented. I mean, you live in Robben Island, which is like equivalent of an Alcatraz in San Francisco Bay. You live on that island for 18 months. You're going to take a lot of pictures. So just from that alone, I had those images. So the Freedom Center, look, let's create the sections of the exhibition and you pour into it the images you feel that are right. And then I would send them maybe 500 images, and it was easy to whittle down, but then the last collection of images, that was the toughest, because you had to really, we've got only short space of time and place to really drive home this message of Mandela's, this universal message of Mandela's life.
How many photographs make up the final exhibit?
Okay, so we have, the Freedom Center have 12 original prints, like original prints from myself and the Mandela Foundation, that are incredibly rare and from that are permanent collection of the Freedom Center, and they are part of the exhibition. And then we've got about 50 big muraled images around those collections. So, yeah.
When you talk about this has been a 4-year relationship, how did this start? Did they reach out to you? Did you reach out to them? How did it end up making the world premiere here in Cincinnati?
Absolutely. Okay, so I was in Europe doing an exhibition in Germany, and a mutual, Mr. John Pepper is a patron and a wonderful supporter of the Freedom Center, and they were looking to contact the Mandela family in order to award Mandela their conductor award, a very prestigious award, and they just couldn't get hold of the family. So mutual friend of Mr. Pepper put us in contact. I phoned him from Munich in Germany, and we got chatting. And then we did a very small little exhibition to commemorate for this conductor award. And Mr. Pepper and the museum director, Richard Cooper, we all kind of came together and said, you know what, we've actually got something here. There's a story we can tell. And so over those years, from 2014, from that date onwards, we've just been building this what is now the journey to Ubuntu.
Mandela always seemed to radiate happiness, great smile. Was that the way that he was most of the time when you were photographing him?
I mean, your listeners everyone knows about Nelson Mandela. And the one thing I really want to share is I'm not Her Majesty the Queen, and I'm not your former president, Bill Clinton, men, or Oprah Winfrey for that matter, who knew Mandela intimately, personally. I can never make a great statement, but one thing I will share with your audience is that, you know, the man we saw in public, this on television, on radio, or whatever event, really the great thing I can say about Mandela, he really was the same man in private. He really was. And you say, this man who always smiled. You know, let me tell you something about Mandela. His life was about sacrifice. And when I used to work privately with him, he would go very quiet at times, but his great sacrifice, yes, was for the people of South Africa to unite and to end this abomination of apartheid, of this nationalist government. And his great sacrifice was that he left his family, and it pained him, you know, to be separated from your family for 27 years, your daughters and your sons and your wife, who was being terrorized by the police, and you could do nothing about it. So yes, Mandela had a great, that was a great pain for him personally. But there's a big thing to be said about having a personal pain. The reason why Mandela could do what he did was because he journeyed. He honestly went into himself, and he was able to seek forgiveness and walk out of prison. Let me tell you a story. He had 3 prison wardens over the 27 years he was in prison. Do you know that he personally paid for and saw to it that the prison wardens' children were all educated at university? Archbishop Desmond Tutu calls Mandela the magnanimity of the man. That's credible.
What kind of effect did he have? I mean, like you traveled with him. What kind of effect did he have on crowds where he spoke?
It was unbelievable. You know, this he would walk into, I would see it. He would go visit a friend at hospital. And by the time he got there, there were 20,000 people around the community hospital, whatever. Like that. He had this great effect because of the smile. And he had a grandfather figure. He was that stature. And people respected that. You know, in Africa, we are very aware of eldership and leadership from elders and communities because we're traditional in our villages and our communities. And people recognize that.
We've hit on this, but let me ask directly, what did the former President Mandela, what did he mean to the South African freedom movement?
Wow. Mandela will be the last person who will say, I did this, I did that. He will be the last. I've never heard him use that word. Mandela was very cognizant of the fact that his role was part of a collective, okay? Accountability. We have words in Zulu and isiXhosa called indaba, which means come round a table, masekane, which means to gather together. The word Ubuntu, I am because we are. It takes a village to raise a child. So these are words that were coined around Mandela, and he really was about that collective leadership, and he brought in all sections in order to dialogue, to speak out about problems. So he was part of a great collective, and we're very cognizant of that fact, that we don't put Mandela on this pedestal. We use examples out of his life because he epitomized the goodness that we want, each of us perhaps want to have in our own lives. So he was definitely part of a collective.
What is South Africa like today compared to under apartheid?
Gosh. You know what? People say it was the only black people who were oppressed. Sure, there were seven pillars of this grand apartheid that limited the growth, the movement, the education, the interracial marriage of black people. It was a scourge on society. It was terrible. But all sections of community in South Africa were affected, white and black. The white were oppressed by the white. If you spoke out, you were in jail, you know, regardless of color. So it was an oppression across the whole nation. So we liberated ourselves. We emancipated ourselves democratically. The challenge of South Africa now out of apartheid and post 20 years of Mandela, you know, having come to power in 1994, is that we are now starting to look at it. We need to emancipate ourselves economically. You know, we need to look at the resources of the country. We have almost 40% unemployment across the board. We have natural resources that are too quickly being sold off to countries that should do better. You know, so we've got challenges. Yes, South Africa is in a far better state, but we are now as a nation, we're still a teenager. You know, if you look at the grand scheme of things, I mean, American history, many more years than ours, we only, 23 years into our democracy. We're young. We're still learning about who we are, what we're capable of. So we've got some teething pains.
What I'm assuming the Nelson Mandela Foundation still exists. What's its role today?
What was Mandela's lasting legacy in South Africa is, yeah, he was the man who brought freedom, but truly his great legacy was the spirit of Ubuntu, dialogue. You know, Mandela, you know, ended a lot of wars in our country through dialogue. But as the Mandela Foundation, it's about protecting our constitution. Mandela's greatest gift to the people of South Africa was perhaps one of the foremost constitutions in the world that protected the sovereign rights of people, you know, the inherent rights, based on the Freedom Charter, which was first created in the 1950s, which unified black people against apartheid. So that truly is his great legacy, is that his input into the country helped build a constitution that protects all people, and which often gets tested and, you know, trialed against. But that's what, as a Mandela Foundation, we protect, and we are integral in defending the human rights, both with the government and you know, opposed to the government.
With the world premiere of this exhibit being here in Cincinnati, are you taking part in any events about the exhibit? Can you tell us what some of those are?
Yeah. So last night I lectured at Northern Kentucky University. to a bunch of grad students. Incredible response. Just I think there's a general interest. So I'm here for this week is we hit ground zero on Friday with the launch, the opening and the evening. I'll, of course, do a speech. But my role is to engage with people. We've got obviously a series of public engagements, but it really is to be at the exhibit and to not represent the work. But you know what? I have so many stories and insights that I'm so keen to share with people and to just and learn from as well. So I'm at the Freedom Center. That's my role. And everything hovers around this exhibition and its opening on Friday.
For folks who go to the exhibition, what do you hope they take away from it?
Interesting question. Our whole mandate and our whole vision has been centered around people going away, understanding that they too can make a difference. That you don't have to be a Martin Luther King or a Nelson Mandela or a Mahatma Gandhi, that or a Rosa Parks for that matter, a person of a society that you can change your life. You can choose a negative or choose a positive. This exhibition is talking about forgiveness. It's talking about leadership. It's talking about tolerance. It's talking about unity. But not in the grand scales as you would perhaps imagine. It's about our own lives. It's about taking accountability and to share, to dialogue, to use your life as a conduit to improve your condition and the lives of others, which is what Mandela actually did. So we have some high ideals there, but we really have this exhibition touches on all of those things. And already knowing what I've known in the past, it's going to be an incredible exhibition.
The obviously the world premiere is here on Friday. Any plans or knowledge yet of where it may go next?
Absolutely. The whole idea is to launch it here in Cincinnati, to make it its home here in Cincinnati. There will always be an element of Nelson Mandela in Cincinnati, and there will be a footprint. I do need to make it very clear and let the audience know that this is the first museum exhibition on the life of Mandela since he died. There has been not one since he's passed away. And I have chosen America because of the diversity of your community. You have no idea the privileges you have here as a people that are unified. So we really want to show Mandela to your audience. And then from there, elements of the exhibition will go out across the country. We have some very exciting places we are still in negotiation with that will be announced in due course.
Just with all those terabytes of photographs that you have, and if there is a permanent footprint here at the Freedom Center, is it something that could change over time, that there could be maybe things added and then
of course,
and highlighted along the way?
Definitely. You know what? There's nothing ever set in stone. The body of the work, yes, the message and the meaning. But, you know, as we archivists, we documenters, new knowledge comes around. Yeah, you know, we constantly, even at the Mandela Foundation, we constantly going into new countries and discovering things about this man's life. Just recently, we discovered the earliest known photograph of Mandela from when he was a student, taken like a class photo, which is fascinating because it opens up a whole new window. So, yeah, we continue to enlighten our audiences and continue to grow from that.
Could any part of this ever be made into an online exhibit?
Definitely. You know what? The Mandela Foundation in Johannesburg were kindly supported by Coca-Cola here in America to build, and Google, to build an online archive of Mandela's life. And I believe we can do something like that here that is permanently based at the Freedom Center. Yeah, there's lots of opportunity.
Mandela, The Journey to Ubuntu opens Friday at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. My guest was Matthew Willman, whose photographs are featured in the exhibit. And you'll find additional details on our website at wvxu.org. Matthew, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Jay, what a pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, an interview about the book 1,000 Places to See in the U.S. and Canada Before You Die. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.